The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. This is Molly Edmonds.
And this is Kristen Conger.
You know, we don't usually say our last names when we say hello to you all, but today we're going to be talking about maiden names. And since neither Kristen nor I are married...
Old maids.
Since we're old maids, we can talk about our maiden names since we still have them.
We're still clinging on to them for dear life.
You know, my father sends me emails about keeping my maiden name when I get married.
Yeah?
He would rather I stay in Edmonds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll I like see. Conger. Has a nice ring to it, Kristen Conger.
You know, there's a town called Edmonds, Washington, out in Seattle.
You should move there.
Where I used to live. And it's just a darling town. When my father and I went out there, we took pictures with literally everything that had Edmonds on it. At one point, Kristen, I kid you not, this pickup truck drove by. I don't know what this truck was for, but the back of the truck said Princess of Edmonds. And my dad was like, get in the truck, we'll get your picture. And I mean, I hope the people who actually owned the truck didn't see that, but I've got a great picture with Princess of Edmonds over it.
You should post it on our blog, How To Stuff. Related to nothing, but just, you know.
Apropos of nothing.
Yeah. Well, the reason we've got maiden names on the brain, Molly, is because of a survey that was recently released, came from Indiana University, that found that 70% of the survey respondents thought that women should give up their maiden names, assume their husband's name when they get married. And even more surprisingly, I thought, was that 50% of those respondents thought it should become a legal requirement for a woman to take her spouse's last name.
Yeah, and this is not just, you know, some men asserting their authority. Both men and women were in this survey. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, people want it to be a legal requirement is so bizarre to me because we already have so many people fighting against laws about, you know, what you can do when you get married and who can get married and all this stuff that you wouldn't think that all of a sudden people would want a law about changing your name after you get married.
Right, and as we will talk about a little later in the podcast, a lot of those similar kinds of laws have been struck down a long time ago. So it seems like we would be taking a legal, big old backward step if we were to pass something like that. But right now, only about 5 to 10% of women who get married keep their maiden name.
Right. There was another recent survey done by The Knot, and about 88% of women in, I think there were 18,000 couples surveyed, were going to change their name. 88%.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's not even an issue. Maybe everyone just changes their name regardless. But it seems like, you know, you hear a lot about the famous hyphenated name.
Yeah.
You know, women keeping their name. It seems like this big deal. And yet so many women just go along with tradition.
Well, and it is a big deal, Molly. With that same survey that you mentioned from theknot.com, 60% of those respondents said that this name change factor was the biggest post-marriage change for them. And I remember when my sister got married, it was a big deal for her. I remember talking to her about it. She thought long and hard about what to do with Conger. And for her privacy, I will, you know, not talk about the details, but it was, you know, a big deal for her because she was worried about, you know, this idea of losing her identity. You know, she did assume her husband's name, but at the same time wanting to respect tradition and all of that. So I think it's definitely a big deal for women.
And it seems that the reason most women cite for changing their name is just a matter of convenience, mm-hmm. especially if you have kids. It's just easy to be able to go to school and have, you know, four people all with the same last name.
Yeah.
But what are the reasons for not changing your name? Let's go back to that. Let's go back to the first woman who bucked tradition and did not change her married name.
Yes, this is a suffragette named Lucy Stone, who in the 1850s, when she got married to an abolitionist named Henry Blackwell at the age of 37, she decided to keep her name. Lucy Stone was going to remain Lucy Stone.
And in 1921, women founded the Lucy Stone League to devote themselves to this cause of preserving women's names. You know, that's when you've got a lot of this women's rights stuff kicking in. But, you know, even though women were getting more rights, taking on greater roles in society, it didn't really catch on. There weren't many people who followed in Lucy Stone's footsteps for a long time.
Right. And at the time, there were these things called head and master laws, which required women in some states to take a husband's name, which is, you know, what I referred to earlier when with people that 50% of respondents wanting similar laws to go back on the books.
Yeah, and it's really kind of scary. There are some states where you couldn't get a driver's license unless you had your husband's last name. In Tennessee, for example, you couldn't register to vote unless you had your husband's last name. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then if you had the last name and got divorced, you couldn't take back your own name unless you could prove definitively in court that the divorce was the husband's fault.
Right.
Which I'm sure is not easy to do in a court of law.
Yeah. So there are all of these restrictions with a woman's last name. And then when we have the rise of second wave feminism in the 1970s, we have a resurgence of this issue of women keeping their last names when they get married. And at that time, that's when a lot of those head and master laws are struck down.
And sort of the changes that happened thanks to that wave of feminism, things like women marrying later, going on for higher levels of education, mm-hmm. people really started to realize that you can make this name for yourself, especially if you were in a career like writing or the arts, that would be really damaging to change later on.
Right.
So as women started to get married later, you know, it didn't make sense to spend almost half your life as one thing and then all of a sudden switch to another. And that's when we really start to see the big numbers of women keeping their names.
Yeah, and then in the 80s, you have more of a trend towards women hyphenating, you know, between like the husband's last name and her last name, so there's a little bit more of a compromise. And we came across a study by a researcher at Harvard University that was examining how this trend of women keeping their last names. And she basically found that there was sort of a spike in women keeping them in the 70s and 80s. But then an interesting thing happened in the 90s when that trend kind of plateaued and even dipped down a little bit.
Right. That same Harvard researcher estimated that in 1990, you've got 23% of women keeping their own last name. By 2000, it's down to 17%. Mm-hmm. This is still pretty sizable, but we definitely are seeing a downward trend. For reasons of convenience, but also, you know, one big predictor of whether women are going to keep their name is a religious background. If they're getting married in a religious ceremony, she went through all these New York Times wedding announcements and found usually that if there was a religious ceremony, then the bride was more likely to take the husband's name.
It's interesting. And I think from that same study, the major predictors for whether or not a woman would keep her name were if she would get married at a later age, mm-hmm. Whether or not she was in an arts or writing career. Like
so, I
mean, you and me.
I was about to say, we're not prime candidates for changing our name.
How much of a, you know, career she had built for herself.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it looks like the field of the career matters. It's, you know, she was looking at women with graduate degrees. And as Kristen said, arts and writing is a much bigger predictor of changing your name than something like having an MBA or being in the business field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've talked about reasons why women might keep their names. But, you know, there's just sort of these weird combinations that erupt. I do have some friends who made up an entirely new name for themselves. They took four letters from the female's name and four letters from the male's name, smashed them together, And that's their last name.
Name smash.
A name smash.
Sounds kind of fun, actually, to do.
It sounds fun, but, you know, we were reading this article in Salon about how are you cutting, you know, your children off from any sense of family history? You know, you're trying to give your kids the best of both worlds, you know, an equal share in both their mother and their father's side. But then do you end up with these kids who just, you know, are really kind of cut off from both sides?
And then with the issue of hyphenated names. So, you know, you get married, you hyphenate your name, you have a child, and he or she has a hyphenated name. But what if your hyphenated child falls in love with another hyphenated child, and then they get married?
I know.
Will their children be hyphenated children?
I don't know.
I mean, it just gets complicated at some point.
It's already hard enough, you know, to get a really long last name on some government forms, you know. Mm-hmm. Just that one hyphenated person might have enough trouble, and then you got to throw in the other name.
Well, Molly, there's an option we have not talked about yet.
Okay.
Why can't the husband just take my name? Why can't Mr. Conger, you know, exist?
Oh, Kristen, he can, but he is going to have a lot of hoops to jump through to do so. Not only just, you know, the egging on of his friends. We were reading articles about men who did try to take their wife's last name. We read one article about a guy who took his wife's name and got a lot of feedback from his friends that essentially amounted to, hey, bud, you need to turn in your man card.
Your man card.
But the fact that a man is willing to do that not only shows some sort of, you know, bucking up tradition, but it's really hard to do.
Yeah, especially post 9/11, changing your name for your legal name is not as easy as it used to be. For a woman, it's pretty simple when you get married. There are actually toolkits that you can buy for $20-$30, and it's got all the documents in it for you to sign and send off to get everything changed for you. But for a guy to do it, he has to spend a lot more money, a lot more time.
It's a legal process.
Yeah, it's kind of a complicated legal process for men to go through.
But, you know, some men are doing a little bit of a compromise, and I've seen couples where the man and the woman take both names. So, you know, both of you would become, you know, let's say you're dating a guy named Jones. Both of you become, like, Conger Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, then you just have friends who are lazy and refuse to call you by your entire name.
Yeah.
And you get lazy, too. It's not like you want to always answer the phone and say, this is Kristen Conger Jones.
But what about abroad, Molly? We're talking about last name traditions in the States. Mm-hmm. I mean, other countries have a little more creative customs.
Right. In Russia, they have what's known as the patronymic name, so that if you're a girl, you get a feminized version of both your father's. Sorry. In Russia, they have this tradition of the patronymic name, where you get, if you're a female, a feminized version of your father's name, so that your middle name and your last name are a feminine version of your father's name. And if you're a male, you get sort of another kind of male version of both names. That's why, you know, a lot of people have trouble reading Russian literature, is because everyone's got the same name. If you're reading a book about a father with his five kids, they all have the same name.
Mm-hmm. And then over in Iceland, there's sort of a similar patronymic custom where all of the last names are basically translated as son of, and then, you know, whatever the surname is. So it carries on through the father, mm-hmm. father's line.
But then you were telling me about naming in Spain, where the rain stays mainly on the plain. And it's really interesting. It's really confusing to me. I think I still need a diagram, but tell me about what they do.
It is a little confusing. And I do have a diagram in front of me that I did draw out. And I remember learning this in Spanish class, and it took my brain for a minute to pick up on it. But this is the custom in Spain and in Latin American countries that I think provides a nice compromise. Because the first thing with a Spanish name is you have, you know, let's say Gabriel Garcia Marquez.
Okay.
One of my faves. Garcia Marquez is actually, Garcia is not his middle name.
Mm-hmm.
He actually has two surnames or apellidos. And Garcia is his primary surname. Mm-hmm. And then Marquez is his secondary surname. Okay. And Garcia he got from his dad.
Okay.
And Marquez comes from his mom. So, that's the way everyone's name is. It's like your first name and then the surname from your father and then the surname, primary surname from your mother. So let's say that Gabriel Garcia Marquez gets married to, oh, I don't know, Frida Kahlo Calderon.
Okay.
Okay, so Kahlo comes from her dad,
mm-hmm.
and Calderon comes from her mom. So she gets married. First of all, it's not really a big deal in Spanish culture for a woman just to, you know, keep her name as is when she gets married. But if she does decide to take on her husband's name, she would then become Frida Kahlo Garcia. So she takes on his primary surname mm-hmm. and turns it into her secondary surname.
Gotcha.
Okay. So the thing I like about that is even though you might be taking a name from your husband, you're still retaining technically your last name. Like Kahlo is your primary surname and what would be akin to our last names,
gotcha.
In the States.
But what if they have kids?
Now, if they have kids, this is what I also like. The child has a name from the father and from the mother.
Okay.
So both sides are represented. So if, Gabriel and Frida had a little baby, it would be, Miguel Garcia Kahlo.
Wow.
And their household would be known as the Garcia Kahlos. So it recognizes the union mm-hmm. of both the man and, the woman. But you're still able to trace the lineage, but it recognizes the different households.
That's cool. So if he lives next door to his father, it'd be easy to say that's that house and that's that
yes.
house.
Yes. The Garcia Marquezes as opposed to the Garcia Kahlos, but they're all part of the same line.
Nice.
I thought, you still are taking it's the paternal surnames that end up tracing down the line, but the woman still is able to keep that link to her family and to pass on her name from her family to her children.
You know, it's interesting you bring up paternal surnames because I would say that even if women have this, internal dilemma about whether to keep their name or not, there's usually, very rarely a question that the kids will get the father's last name.
Mm-hmm.
I can only think of one instance where I had a coworker, she was female and she was, the only side of that family. That was gonna be like their only grandchild
mm-hmm.
and the father's side had a lot of grandchildren. So they gave the kid the mother's last name.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this really interesting blog on Psychology Today that talked about the reason that we're so hung up on giving our kids their father's name is because it's sort of this reinforcement of the fact that the baby is theirs and they should invest in it and, resources.
Yeah, and because there's never really any question of whether or not you are your mother's child.
Yeah.
It's kind of a given. but with that, there might be more of a question. And so this guy is saying that, it goes back to evolutionary biology of, a woman wanting, to entice, the man to invest resources in his children. So she's going to say, hey, I'm going to, this is your child.
Stick
this
around.
Says your last name. So
yeah.
Go hunt and gather.
But the nice thing, we were talking about all these weird choices. They're not weird, but we have all these choices today, despite the fact that many women are just choosing to go with tradition. But the nice thing, this kind of ties back to what we were talking about in our feminism podcast, is that, people might think that feminists would be really disappointed in us with all this work they did to keep your own identity, keep your own name. But the fact that women have this choice and exercise the choice is actually sort of a perfect demonstration of how feminism has worked for us.
Yeah, and it is a personal decision. I mean, it's a, going back to that survey from The Knot that said that, 60% of the respondents said, this is one of the biggest issues going into marriage. And it's a personal decision for a couple
mm-hmm.
to talk about. If you need to compromise, you need to be able to come to a compromise. If you want to hyphenate, you want to make a name smash, you want to, keep your own name, he should take your name, whatever. It's something you should talk about. And Molly, I think it will be interesting too in the coming years when we have to see how the rise of civil unions and gay marriage, how that might kind of change this whole concept too, if that'll
yeah.
kind of lessen the social stigma around it.
Yeah.
So
I've always said I'm only going to change if it's aesthetically pleasing to me. And I think that's a big consideration for people.
Yeah. One of my sisters... names. Once she got married, her first and last name now rhyme.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be Molly Uwali.
Yeah.
Or do I?
Or do you? Well, we would like to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think that women should keep their maiden names when they get married? Or do you think it doesn't matter? Just go with what's easy.
And if you did change your name, did you struggle with it? Do you miss your old name?
Or if you kept your name, did you, how'd that go?
Basically, we want to hear every single viewpoint on this issue you possibly have.
We want to know your thoughts. And speaking of knowing your thoughts, it is a good time now, Molly, for a little bit of listener mail. This week in listener mail, we're going to talk about polygamy. We got some interesting feedback on our polygamy podcast. Tahsin, and I don't know where Tahsin's from, but Tahsin wrote in, and he is Muslim, and he wanted to comment on polygamy podcast. He said the translation from the Quran that you quoted is correct. However, you did fail to mention another verse. And this is from Surah chapter 4, verse 129. Ye are never able to do justice between wives, even if it is your ardent desire. But turn not away from a woman altogether so as to leave her, as it were, hanging in the air. Now he says, some scholars believe that if you take this verse into account when looking at the meaning of a prior verse that suggests that marrying 2, 3, or 4 women is okay, that this verse basically says that since you can never treat your wives equally, that polygamy is then forbidden. He says, now I completely understand that this is not what is practiced in the Middle East, but I just wanted to shed some light on the subject. I'm not trying to defend Islam as much as show that some cultural ideologies or old traditions may come into play when there is a disagreement or lack of consensus among scholars about what particular verses mean. I myself am a happily married Muslim man who's never considered and will never consider polygamy because I do not think it is right.
Okay.
So that's a very interesting perspective. And then we got in another email from Samuel, who had a lot to say. And two of the points that he brought up that I thought were interesting was he saw a documentary at BYU from a modern polygamist spokesperson who was defending polygamy. And he thought it was, the guy made an interesting argument saying that polygamy is regarded as taboo and wrong, but at the same time, our culture seems to respect and promote men who sleep around with many women and maybe have even fathered multiple children, making them seem cool and hip, living in cohabitation and not committing to anyone. Yet when you have a man who tries to form a committed relationship with several women and provide for them and take care of them, it suddenly becomes wrong and evil. It seems backwards to me. Interesting thought. And then I liked this one. He says, this is just from my point of view, but there are a lot of scumbag men out there, as the stereotype promotes, and a lot of good women. For example, single mothers who are good and trying to live an honest life who get abandoned by men and such. They deserve to be with someone equally as good and committed and honest. And I think that women are usually better and more righteous. Yeah, more righteous than men anyway. So many good women and so little good men. Why not practice polygamy so that all can enjoy the goodness that comes from marriage and relationships?
Wow.
Interesting perspective, Samuel.
That is an interesting perspective. And one more on polygamy. This is from Sean Lee. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And you know, Krista, when we did that podcast, we kind of started off with big love and then transitioned into this perhaps utopian world where women have these choices. And Sean Lee lives in Utah and wanted to make sure that we know that, you know, the realities of polygamy in Utah are nothing like big love, and that women don't have these choices. So she wrote in that, women in these situations do not have choice of any kind. Most often the sexual relations in these marriages are quite literally situations of rape. Not only are they severely undereducated, they are also taught from birth that they are inferior to men, have been treated as such all their lives, and are often bought and sold like chattel. But then she goes on, once she talks about sort of the role of women in Utah, other untold victims of polygamy in Utah and this lifestyle are the young boys. Contrary to our podcast, polygamy is not plagued with too many men, nor do polygamous fathers want sons to carry on the family name. Boys around 12 or 13 are regularly dropped off in the local Walmart parking lot to fend for themselves. And these boys are called the Lost Boys. And she pointed us to a website, childbrides.org, which is run from Utah to help people transitioning from a polygamous lifestyle. We really liked seeing everyone's viewpoints on polygamy.
Yeah, we had some great feedback from that. So, as always, if you have any questions or comments, or just want to tell us a little story, feel free to send us an email at momstuff@howstuffworks.com. And if you just want to expand your mind and learn more, go and read some fascinating articles at howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.